I'm so grateful for all you've done, Astrid said warmly. Yeah. After I look at her latest EKG, I'll be able to give you a more accurate prognosis.
Tell me, doctor, have you heard of a specialist at St. Luke's Medical Center in Houston named David Scott? Dr. Scott has developed an experimental new treatment for congestive heart disease. Astrid continued, not letting him off the hook.
Wow. Beauty and brains. A woman who can talk so seductively about heart disease, Professor Un thought. That damn Charlie Wu was one lucky prick. If only Astrid came from another family. If only she wasn't so bloody rich, she could be his mistress. He would set her up at his secret apartment at the Mark and watch her do laps naked in the pool all day.
Inside the bedroom, Nick was wondering what precisely to say to his grandmother.
Ne ho ma.
Cantonese for, how are you? He said, and then immediately wondered why he had asked her such a stupid question.
I haven't been too well, but today I'm feeling better than I have in many weeks.
I'm so glad to hear that. Nick crouched beside Sui and looked her squarely in the face. He knew that the moment had come for him to deliver his apology. As much as he had been hurt by her, and as much as he felt that she had wronged Rachel, he knew that it was his duty to ask for her forgiveness. He cleared his throat and began.
Amma, I'm so sorry for the way I behaved. I hope that you can find it in your heart to forgive me.
Sui looked away from her grandson and let out a long, slow exhale. Nikki was home. Her dutiful grandson was by her side again, kneeling at her feet and asking for redemption. If only he knew how she truly felt. She was quiet for a few moments, and then she turned to face him again.
Are you comfortable in your bedroom?
My bedroom? Nick asked, momentarily confused by her question.
Yes. Has it been made up nicely for you?
I haven't been staying here. I've been at Collins.
On Barima Road?
No, Collins' family sold that house a few years ago. He's living in Sentosa Cove now.
Why on earth are you staying there and not here?
It dawned on Nick at that moment that his grandmother didn't have a clue that he'd been back for over a week. She obviously had nothing to do with banning him from Tyersall Park. He wasn't sure what to say at first, but then quickly recovered himself. There are so many people visiting at the moment. I didn't think there would be room for me.
Nonsense. No one is supposed to be in your bedroom.
Sui pushed a button beside her, and within a few seconds, Madri and Patravadi were by her bedside.
Please tell Arling to have Nikki's rooms made up. I have no idea why he's staying at some godforsaken place instead of here, Sui instructed her lady's maids.
Of course, ma'am, Madri replied.
At that moment, Nick realized that this was his grandmother's tacit manner of forgiving him. He felt suddenly lighter, as if a gigantic boulder had been lifted off his back. As Sui's lady's maids stepped out of the bedroom, Adam and Pia walked into the sitting room and, for a few seconds before the bedroom door closed, saw their cousin Nick crouched by his grandmother's side. Astrid waved from the settee where she was seated, talking with Professor Un.
Adam, it's so good to see you.
Oh, Astrid, I'm sorry, I didn't see you over there. Pia, this is my cousin Astrid. She's Auntie Felicity's daughter.
I've heard so much about you, Pia said with a smile.
Was that Nicholas I saw in there with Amma?
We were just going to have a quick look in before breakfast, Adam said.
Nicholas Young? Professor Woon said in alarm. He's in the bedroom? But we are under strict orders not to...
Francis, hold that thought for 1 minute, Astrid said, placing her hand on his lap, her fingers almost grazing his inner thigh. The doctor trembled at her unexpected touch and immediately went mute. Astrid turned to Adam and Pia and said, I'm sure Amma would love to see you in a little while. She's doing much better this morning. Why don't you head down to breakfast first? I hear that Aching is making her famous crepes.
Ooh, I do love a good crepe, Pia said.
Me too. And Aching makes a special sauce of Belgian chocolate and Lyle's golden syrup to drizzle over them.
Professor Un, have you ever had chocolate-infused golden syrup drizzled over your crepes?
No,
the doctor said, sweat beginning to bead around his temples.
Well, you must. In fact, why don't you join us right now? Let's all go down for some crepes.
I'm sure the whole family would love to have an update from you about Amma, Astrid said, getting up from the settee. The three of them stood there waiting for the doctor.
Give me a minute, Professor Un said sheepishly.
He knew that there was no way he could stand up at that moment. Back in the bedroom, Sui had instructed Nick to go to the top drawer of her bureau and fetch something for her.
Do you see the pale blue box?
Yes.
At the bottom of the box are some silk pouches. Please bring me the yellow one.
Nick unfastened the metal clasp on the blue embossed leather box and flipped open the lid. Inside was an assortment of objects and curiosities. Vintage tortoiseshell combs and coins of varying currencies mixed in with letters and faded old photographs. He came upon a small stack wrapped with a piece of ribbon and realized that it was every picture he had ever sent to her from his boarding school days in England. At the bottom of the box were several jewelry pouches, the kind made of padded silk that one saw in Chinatown trinket shops all over the world. He found a small yellow pouch and returned to his grandmother's bedside. Suyi unzipped the pouch, took out a pair of earrings, and placed them in the palm of Nick's hand.
I want you to have these. For your wife.
Nick felt a lump in his throat as he realized the enormous significance of her gift. His grandmother was acknowledging Rachel as his wife for the very first time. He glanced at the earrings in his palm. They were simple pearl studs set on old-fashioned gold posts, but the luminosity of each pearl was stunning. They seemed to glow from within.
Thank you, Amma. I know Rachel will love these.
Sui looked her grandson in the eye.
My father gave these to me when I escaped Singapore before the war, when the Japanese soldiers had finally reached Johor, and we knew all was lost. They are very special. Please look after them carefully.
We will cherish them, Amma.
Now, I think it's time for my morning pills. Will you call Madri and Patravadi in?
In the breakfast room, Aching had set up a cooking station at the end of the long dining table. Rather unusually, she eschewed the use of a crepe pan to make her beloved recipe. Instead, she cooked them on her trusty wok, expertly tilting and twisting the large black wok to create the perfect round, thin pancakes. Eddie had woken up Fiona and the kids for this special treat, and his mother, Victoria, Catherine, and Tuxin were assembled in the room as well, eagerly awaiting their custom-made crepes.
Can I have mine with some ham and cheese? Tuxin asked. I prefer savory ones to sweet ones, especially in the morning.
Uncle Tuxin, you're missing out if you don't try the fabulous sauce that Aching makes, Eddie said.
I want mine with ice cream,
young Augustine said.
Augie, you will eat them exactly as I instruct you to,
Eddie barked at his son. Catherine exchanged glances with Alex, who simply rolled her eyes and shook her head. As the family began tucking into the first round of crepes, Astrid entered the dining room with Adam, Pia, and Professor Un.
What are you doing here?
Eddie said, startled by his cousin's sudden appearance at the house. He thought she had been ordered to stay away by her parents since the India engagement scandal.
I'm having crepes, just like you,
Astrid replied breezily.
Well,
I suppose some of us don't have any shame,
Eddie muttered under his breath. Astrid chose to ignore her cousin and went over to greet her aunties with pecks on their cheeks. Victoria stiffened visibly as Astrid kissed her and asked,
How is your mother? I hear she's been bedridden for the past 2 days.
Implicit in her disapproving tone was that Astrid was the one responsible for making her mother sick.
Considering the fact that she managed to play bridge for 5 hours yesterday with Mrs. Li Yongchen, Diana Yu, and Rosemary Ye, I think she's doing just fine, Astrid replied.
Alex wondered what the doctor was doing at their breakfast table, but ever well-mannered, she smiled graciously at her old classmate and said,
Francis, how good of you to join us.
Astrid insisted I try some of Ah Ching's famous pancakes. You've been upstairs already?
Eddie said in alarm, wondering if she had told Ah Ma that Nicky was in town. Astrid looked him straight in the eye.
Yes, I've spent a little time with Ah Ma. She wanted to see photos of my engagement since she helped to plan it. Such a wonderful stroke of luck that there was someone there to capture the occasion.
Eddie looked at her open-mouthed.
Congratulations on your engagement, Astrid, Fiona said.
Yes, congratulations,
Catherine and Alex both chimed merrily. Victoria was the only aunt not to offer any wishes, turning instead to Professor Un.
How is my mother faring this morning?
Well, I haven't had the chance to look in on her yet, as Nicholas is with her at the moment.
What? Are you telling me that Nicky is upstairs with my grandmother?
Eddie exclaimed loudly. Calm down, Eddie, Fiona chided.
Astrid smiled sweetly at her cousin.
Precisely what is your issue with Nicky seeing Ama? When did you become her bouncer?
He's been banned from the house, Eddie said.
Who banned him exactly?
Because if you ask me, Ama was certainly quite overjoyed to see him a few minutes ago, Astrid said, calmly pouring some of the chocolate golden syrup onto her crepe.
Are you sure about that? Victoria said indignantly.
Yes, I was in the room when Ama specifically requested to see him.
Eddie shook his head angrily, bolting up from his chair.
If nobody is going to do anything about this, I am. Nikki's going to give her another heart attack.
Give who a heart attack?
Eddie spun around to see his grandmother sitting in a wheelchair as Nick pushed her into the breakfast room. Trailing them were her oxygen tank and several other medical devices, dutifully being guided along by her Thai lady's maids. Behind them followed a cluster of nurses and the on-duty associate cardiologist.
Mummy, what are you doing down here?
Victoria shrieked.
What do you mean? I wanted to have breakfast in my own breakfast room. Nicky told me that Ah Ching was making her delicious crepes.
The young associate looked at Professor Un rather helplessly, but handed his boss several computer printouts.
Prof, she insisted on coming downstairs, but I managed to run some diagnostics first.
Professor Un scanned the morning's reports, his eyes widening.
My goodness.
Bravo, Mrs. Young. I'm amazed you are feeling so well this morning.
Sui ignored the doctor, her eyes instead focusing on Eddie.
What an interesting place for you to sit,
she said mischievously. Oh, sorry, Eddie said, getting flustered as he hastily got up from his chair at the head of the table, while Nick dutifully rolled Sui's chair into place.
Come, sit next to me,
Sui said to Nick, patting the table. One of the maids swiftly produced a chair, and as Nick took his seat beside his grandmother at the head of the table, he couldn't help but grin from ear to ear. For the first time since he had arrived in Singapore, he felt like he was home again. Ah Ling entered the breakfast room and placed a cup and saucer in front of Sui.
Here's your favorite Da Hong Bao tea.
Grown in the Uyi Mountains of China's Fujian province, Da Hong Bao, which translates to Big Red Robe, it's one of the world's rarest teas. It's priced at $1,400 per gram, which makes the tea worth 30 times its weight in gold.
Splendid. I feel like I haven't tasted tea in ages. Arling, did you get my message to see that Nikki's room is made up? For some reason, he's been staying in Sentosa, of all places.
Yes, Nikki's bedroom is all ready for him, Arling announced, trying to suppress a giggle as she noticed the veins in Eddie's neck beginning to twitch.
Is my little brother coming over tomorrow for Friday night dinner?
Sui asked.
Yes, we're making Mr. Shang his favorite yen war.
Ah, good. Astrid, be sure to invite Charlie tomorrow night.
Astrid's heart soared. I'm sure he would love to come, Amma.
Has everyone seen Astrid's engagement ring?
Sui asked. Catherine, Alex, and Victoria craned their necks to study the diamond on Astrid's finger, realizing with a start that they were staring at their mother's old engagement ring. Alex, who had absolutely no interest in jewelry, quickly went back to devouring her crepe. But Victoria couldn't hide her look of disappointment. She always thought that this ring would be hers one day.
Astrid, it looks lovely on you, Catherine offered, before adding, are you planning on having an engagement party?
Sui cut in enthusiastically.
What a good idea! Arling, will you call the Siens and the Tans to come over tomorrow night? Let's have a party.
Of course,
Arling said. Mummy, I don't think you should have so much excitement when you're just beginning to feel better. You should rest, Victoria said officiously.
Nonsense. I'll rest when I'm dead. Tomorrow, I want to see everyone. Let's celebrate Astrid's engagement and Nikki's homecoming,
Sui decreed. Fiona noticed that Eddie was turning purple. Elbowing him in the ribs, she said,
Eddie, loosen your ascot so the air can get in. And breathe, darling. Breathe deeply.
Chapter 15 Wu Mansions, Singapore. Your IC, please, the security guard said sternly as Astrid rolled down the window of her car. Astrid dug into her purse for her wallet, took out her Singapore identity card, and handed it to the guard. He held the card up to his eye level to compare the semi-pixelated photograph to her face, squinting at every detail. It was a bad hair day, Astrid joked. The guard didn't crack a smile, but took her IC into the guardhouse and began to scan it through his computer system. Astrid had to resist rolling her eyes. This particular mainland Chinese guard already knew her. How many times had she been here in the past few months? It made her understand how the Wus came to develop a particular reputation among Singapore's establishment when Charlie's father, Wu Haolian, first made his fortune in the early 1980s. The Wus did seem pretentious. There was no avoiding that fact. At a time when the moneyed crowd preferred to populate elegant bungalows tucked away in the leafy enclaves of Districts 9, 10, and 11, Wu Haolian had bought a large parcel of land off one of Singapore's busiest thoroughfares and built a sprawling family compound right there for all the world to see. He had erected a tall white stucco wall around the property, and at the top of the wall, sharp red glazed tiles undulated up and down like the scaly curves on a dragon's back, ending at the main gates with twin carved dragon heads in bronze. Rectangular gold plaques placed in niches at 30-foot intervals around the wall were engraved in an ornate calligraphy script with the words, Wu Mansions. To ordinary Singaporeans, the 90% who lived in public housing apartments, it seemed like the Wus were the richest family in the land. The family was seen being driven around in a fleet of ever-changing Rolls Royces, always accompanied by security guards in a Mercedes wherever they went. They were one of the first families on the island to flaunt their private jet and spent all their holidays touring Europe, where Irene Wu and her daughters developed a voracious appetite for haute couture and haute jewelry. Whenever Irene appeared in public, she was always clad in the most ornately festooned frocks and laden with so much jewelry that all the other socialites nicknamed her Christmas Tree behind her back. But all this was so long ago, Astrid thought, as the tall steel gate embossed with the ornate W seal began to slide to one side, and she sped up the short driveway to the Palladian-style house with a white-columned portico covered in bougainvillea. The woos had receded into the background, especially after Charlie's father passed away, and a new generation of brash billionaires burst onto the scene in the early 2000s, building even more ostentatious pleasure domes and vying for visibility in the society pages. Only Charlie's mother remained in Singapore these days, reluctant to give up her house. Astrid pulled up behind a gray Mercedes SUV already parked underneath the portico. She saw Lincoln Tay, her distant cousin, emerge from the driver's seat and walk around to the trunk of the car.
Atok, fancy seeing you here,
Astrid said as she got out of her car.
What can I tell you? You're always hanging around the rich and famous, and I just work for them, he joked.
Now, Astrid, tell me, why are you still driving that old Acura? Does it even pass inspection anymore?
This is the most reliable car I've ever owned. I'm going to drive it until I'm forced to scrap it.
Come on, La.
You are so loaded. At the very least, you should upgrade to the ILX. Or maybe Charlie can buy Acura, the company, for you, and have them design you a car from scratch.
Ha ha, very funny, Astrid said. It occurred to her that every time she saw this distant cousin, he would make some sort of reference to her money.
Hey, come and see something very special, Atok said as he opened the trunk of the SUV.
A large igloo cooler was strapped to one side of the spacious rear, and Atok carefully lifted out a large plastic bag that had been inflated with oxygen. Inside was a dragon-like fish, about 2 feet in length.
Oh, it's an arowana, Astrid said. Not just any arowana. This is Valentino, Mrs. Wu's prized super red arowana. It was worth at least $175,000. And now it will be worth $250,000. Minimum.
Why is that?
I just took Valentino to his plastic surgeon. He was beginning to develop a droopy eye. So we gave him an eye lift. And he even got a very slight chin job. See how handsome he looks now?
There's a plastic surgeon for fish? Astrid asked incredulously.
The best in the world, right here in Singapore. He specializes in arowanas.
The Asian arowana is the world's most expensive aquarium fish, especially coveted by collectors in Asia, who will pay hundreds of thousands for a fine specimen. Known in Chinese as longyu, dragonfish, this long fish plated with large shimmering scales and with whiskers jutting from its chin resembles the mythological Chinese dragon. Aficionados believe that the fish brings good luck and fortune. And there have even been tales of arowanas sacrificing their lives by leaping out of their tanks in order to warn their owners of imminent danger or bad business deals. No wonder lovers of this fish are willing to shell out thousands to get their precious pets eye lifts, fin tucks, or chin jobs. No word on arowana Botox yet, but that can't be far behind. Before Astrid could properly soak in this fabulous bit of trivia, the front door opened and Irene Wu came running out. A round-faced woman in her early 70s, she was dressed in a bright orange Moroccan-style tunic top embroidered with tiny mirrored glass pieces and sequins, white capri pants, and fluffy white bedroom slippers embroidered with the Four Seasons Hotel logo. On her fingers sparkled an emerald ring. Another ring consisting of 3 interlaced bands of diamonds set in white, yellow, and rose gold, and a pear-cut diamond ring that was nearly as big as the real fruit itself.
How is he? How's my baby Valentino?
Irene asked breathlessly, rushing toward Atok and the plastic bag.
Mrs. Wu, he's doing very well. The surgery was a success, but he's still a bit sluggish at the moment from being drugged.
Let's get him acclimated back in his tank.
Yes, yes. Astrid, I didn't even see you. Come in, come in. Sorry, I'm so kanchong.
Cantonese for panicky, anxious.
Today, because of Valentino's procedure, my goodness, don't you look lovely? Who are you wearing today?
Irene asked, admiring Astrid's floral kimono-inspired wrap dress.
Oh, this is a dress that Romeo Gigli made for me years ago, Auntie Irene,
Astrid said, leaning in to give her a peck on the cheek.
Of course it is. So pretty. And don't you think it's high time you started calling me Mama instead of Auntie Irene?
Come on, Mom. Lay off Astrid, Charlie said, standing at the front door. Astrid beamed at the sight of him and rushed up the steps to give him a tight hug.
I'm going to tear up and ruin my mascara. Look at my two lovebirds.
Irene sighed happily. As the group entered the house, Charlie steered Astrid towards the sweeping gone-with-the-wind-style double staircase instead of the living room.
Where are you two going?
Irene asked.
I'm just taking her upstairs for a little while, Mom, Charlie said in a slightly exasperated tone.
But Gracie has spent all day making so many types of nonya kueh. You must come and have tea and nonya kueh with me in a little while, okay?
Of course we will, Astrid said.
As they climbed the stairs, Charlie said in a low voice, My mom is getting more and more needy every time I see her.
She just misses you. It must get rather lonely for her now that none of you are around in Singapore.
She's surrounded all day by her staff of 20.
It's not the same, and you know it.
Well, she has a house in Hong Kong. She could spend all her time there if she wants. But she insists on staying here, Charlie argued.
This is where most of her memories are, just like yours,
Astrid said as she entered Charlie's bedroom. The space had been redecorated several years ago in cool masculine tones with shah green-covered walls and custom-designed contemporary wood furnishings from BDDW in New York. But Charlie had kept one reminder of his childhood in the bedroom. The entire ceiling had been installed with a mechanized mural depicting all the constellations in the sky. And as a kid, Charlie would go to sleep every night staring at the glowing ceiling of stars as they rotated daily according to the zodiac. Today, he wasted no time in pulling Astrid onto the bed and smothering her with kisses.
You have no idea how much I've missed you,
Charlie said, kissing the tender area right above her collarbone.
Me too, Astrid sighed, as she put her arms around him,
feeling the ripple of muscles down his back. After spending some time making out, they lay entwined in each other's arms, staring up at the sparkling night sky together.
I feel like a teenager again,
Astrid giggled.
Remember how you used to sneak me up here after MYF?
Methodist Youth Fellowship.
On Saturdays?
Yeah. I still feel like I'm doing something naughty having you in here right now.
The door's wide open, Charlie. We haven't done anything R-rated,
Astrid said with a laugh.
I'm so happy to see you in such a good mood,
Charlie said, running his fingers through her hair.
I feel like the storm's finally lifted.
You have no idea how amazing it felt to be in the breakfast room yesterday when my grandmother came downstairs.
I can only imagine.
She made everyone look at my engagement ring. It's like she was daring the rest of the family to challenge us.
Your grandmother is one cool lady. I'm looking forward to seeing her tonight.
She invited my mom too, you know.
Really?
Astrid looked at him in surprise.
Yeah, an engraved invitation was delivered this morning. My mother could hardly believe it.
She never thought the day would come that she would be invited to Tyersall Park. I think she's going to frame the card.
Well, it's going to be quite a party. I can't wait to see the looks on certain faces when I walk into the drawing room with your mother.
Which ones?
Oh, you know.
One or two of my aunties are snottier than others. And there's one cousin in particular who's going to lose his shit.
Rico Suave, the best-dressed man in Hong Kong?
Charlie teased.
Best-dressed Hall of Fame, he'll tell you, Astrid laughed. Come on, let's go back downstairs before your mother thinks we're doing something nasty up here.
I want her to think I'm doing something nasty.
They got out of bed reluctantly, straightened their clothes, and strolled down the gracious curving stairway hand in hand. Passing through the archway underneath the staircase, they entered the grand living room, which was handsomely decorated in French Empire style, intermingled with museum-quality Chinese antiques. In the middle of the cavernous space was a large free-form pond, where a grove of tropical trees grew out of the water, reaching almost to the top of a glass-domed cupola. Big koi swam in the gurgling pond, but the focal point of the living room was the main wall, which featured a 200-gallon fish tank painted pitch black that was recessed into the wall.
"Valentino looks happy to be home," Charlie said excitedly as the two of them went up to look at him.
Inside the tank, Irene's precious super-red arowana undulated happily all alone, the pink fiber optic light making his body glow an even brighter iridescent red. Astrid looked down at the coffee table, which was groaning with a colorful array of Nonya dessert cakes on navy and gold rim Limoges plates.
"Guelapis, my favorite,"
Charlie said, plopping down on the plush gold brocade sofa and picking up one of the buttery pieces of cake with his fingers.
"Don't you think we should wait for your mom?"
"Oh, she'll be out in a minute, I'm sure. Let's get started. You don't ever have to stand on ceremony here. You know how down-to-earth my mother is." Astrid began to pour tea into Charlie's cup from the silver tea service.
"That's what I've always loved about your mother. She doesn't put on any airs. She's such a warm and simple lady."
"Yeah, tell that to the folks at Bulgari," Charlie snorted as Atok entered the living room.
"Lincoln, are you going to join us for some tea? Where's my mom?"
She's in her bedroom. She went to lie down," Lincoln said as he fidgeted with his cell phone.
"Why is she lying down?"
Charlie asked. Astrid looked up from pouring her tea.
"Is she not feeling well?"
No. Atok stood there with a funny look on his face.
"Astrid, I think you better call home."
"Why?"
Your grandma just passed away.
Part 3. The Man Who Dies Rich Dies Disgraced. Andrew Carnegie, 1889. Chapter 1. Tyersall Park, Singapore. Madri Vitsudarum. Lady's maid to Sui since 1999.
Madame usually has a bowl of congee in the morning. Sometimes with a fresh raw egg cracked into the steaming hot congee. Sometimes with just a few ikanbilis. Today, she asked for Hokkien Mami, which was a highly unusual request for breakfast. The noodles Aching prepares for her are done in a very specific way, using a hand-pulled flat yellow noodle, which she likes stir-fried in a thick oyster sauce gravy with a dash of brandy. For lunch, Madame just wanted me to bring her some fresh star fruits and guavas from her trees. She asked for the whole fruit. She didn't want them sliced or anything, and sat up in her bed, staring at her fruits and holding them in her hands, but not eating anything. That's the moment I realized that something was terribly wrong.
Philip Young, only son. I saw Mummy after breakfast. For the first time in as long as I can remember, she wanted to know how I spent my days in Sydney. I told her about how I drive down to my favorite cafe in Rose Bay every morning for my flat white. And then there are always errands to run. Something in the house that needs fixing. Or I'll have lunch in the city at one of my clubs, or play a round of tennis with a friend. In the late afternoons, I like to sit at the end of my dock and do a spot of fishing. That's when the fish are always biting. For dinner, I often eat whatever I've caught. Mickey, our chef, will always do something terrific with the fish,
grilled and served over risotto, made into a tartare, or steamed Chinese style with rice or noodles. Sometimes I'll just go down to the local and have a pub dinner. Mummy shook her head in a mixture of sadness and disbelief. The thought of me sitting in a pub eating a burger by myself like a common laborer is too much for her to fathom. But I love eating very simply when Eleanor isn't around. If she's in town, Eleanor keeps Mickey very busy, cooking 12 to 14 courses for her dinners. Then Mummy said something rather surprising. She asked me if I had forgiven Eleanor. I was a bit shocked for a moment. In all these years, Mummy had never brought it up. I told her that I had forgiven my wife a very long time ago. Mummy seemed happy about this. She looked at me for a long time and said, "You are just like your father, after all." I told her I was going to meet up with a few of my ACS old boys for drinks at the men's bar in the cricket club, but I would be back before our dinner guests arrived. As I left her bedroom, there was a part of me that sensed she didn't want me to leave. I wondered for a moment if I should cancel the meetup and stay by her bedside, but then I thought, "Philip, you're being ridiculous. You'll be back in 2 hours." Li Aling, head housekeeper. At around 4:30 p.m., I went upstairs to give Sui a final update on tonight's menu for the party. When I went into the bedroom, Catherine was sitting by her bedside, and I noticed that someone had opened all the windows and curtains. Sui usually prefers the curtains drawn in the afternoons to protect her antique furniture from the setting sun. So I began to close them. "Leave them," Catherine said. I looked over at her and began to ask why, and that's when I realized that Sui was gone. You could just see that her spirit had left her body. I was so shocked. I panicked at first and asked, "Where are the doctors? Why didn't the alarms go off?" They did. The doctors came in and I sent them all away, Catherine said in an unnaturally calm voice. I wanted to be alone with my mother one last time. Professor Francis Un, MBBS, MRCP, UK, MMED, Internal Medicine, FRCP, London, FAMS, FRCP, Edinburgh, FACC, USA, Personal Cardiologist. I had been entertaining Deborah Aronson, the publisher of Poseidon Books, at home in my wine cellar when the call came. You see, I collect contemporary Chinese art, and Poseidon has been trying to woo me into doing a coffee table book on my collection. When my associate, Dr. Chia, called with the urgent news from Tyersall Park, I immediately said, "Do not resuscitate." I knew it would be hopeless. There's been so much scarring to her heart. It would be pointless to try and revive her. It's her time to go. None of this came as a surprise to me. In fact, after looking at her stats the previous morning during that fabulous crepe breakfast, I was surprised that she was even able to get out of bed. Her heart rate, her blood pressure, her ejection fraction, everything was off the charts. But you know, I've seen this happen time and again. In the day or two before a patient passes, they can experience a sudden spurt of energy. The body rallies, as if it knows that this will be the last hurrah. The minute I saw Suyi appear at the breakfast table, I surmised that this was happening. After all this time, with all the medical advances we've made, the human body is still an unfathomable mystery to us. The heart, most of all. Alexandra Alex Yangcheng, youngest daughter. I was in the library with Fiona and Callist, showing Callist my Enid Blyton first editions, when the dogs started howling. It must have been around 3:30 in the afternoon. It wasn't just our pack of Alsatians that patrolled the grounds. but it seemed like every dog within a 2-mile radius was making restless, high-pitched yelps. I gave Fiona a look, and she knew exactly what I was thinking. She left the library without a word and went upstairs to check on Mummy. By now, the howling had stopped, but I remember feeling enveloped by a sense of dread. My heart was beating a mile a minute, and I kept staring at the door. I was somehow willing Fiona to not come back through those doors. I didn't want to hear any bad news. I was trying to focus on Callist, who wanted to know if she could have the entire Mallory Towers series. They were her favorites, too, when she was younger. Then Fiona came back in, and I just froze until she smiled.
"All's well. Auntie Cat is with her," she whispered to me.
I was so relieved, and we went back to the stacks. About an hour later, Arlene came rushing into the library to tell me to get upstairs. The look on her face told me everything. You see, the dogs knew all along. They could sense it coming. Cassandra Shang, niece. I was in bed at Harlan's Court, reading the latest Jilly Cooper novel when my phone began to vibrate on silent mode. I recognized the number immediately. It was Deep Throat, my spy at Tyersal Park. Of course you knew I had an inside source at that house. It would be so foolish of me not to. At first, Deep Throat simply said, "Bo Liao," Hokkien for "no more." I said, "What do you mean, Bo Liao?" Deep Throat was overly excited, but she managed to get it out. "Su Yi just died. Big fight upstairs right now. I must go." So of course the first thing I did was call my father. I said, "Are you at Tyersal Park?" He said, "No." I think I caught him at his mistress's apartment. He was very out of breath. So I said, "You better head over there now. Something just happened to your sister." Lincoln Atok Te, distant cousin. Great Uncle Alfred called me. I think he was on his way to Tyersal Park. He said to tell everyone on my side of the family that Su Yi had just passed, but he didn't want any of us at the house tonight. "Tell your father to stay home, and I'll let you all know when to come. Tonight is just for the family." As if we're not part of the family, fucking bastard. Then he said, "Better start ordering the tents and folding chairs. We're going to need a lot of them." I was still at Irene Wu's house trying to acclimate the damn fish back into the tank. So I told her the news and she started to lose it.
"Oh no! Alamak! How to face Astrid?"
she cried, fleeing to her bedroom. I went back into the living room, and when I saw Astrid sitting there pouring tea like Princess Diana, I realized the spoilt bitch didn't have a clue that her grandma had just kicked the bucket. Kanina. I had to be the one to tell her. Of course she was in total shock, but I don't feel sorry for her one bit. She's now instantly a million times richer than she already is. Victoria Young, third daughter.
The first thing that came into my mind when I saw her lying there with Eddie crying over her body hysterically was, "Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus."
She has been released, and so have I. I'm free at last. Finally free. I numbly put my hand on Alex's back and tried to rub it soothingly while she stood looking at Mummy. I thought I might cry, but I didn't. I looked over at Kat, who was sitting in the armchair still holding Mummy's hand, and she wasn't crying either. She was just staring out the window with a rather odd look on her face. I suppose we must have all looked rather odd that day. I started to consider the curtains. Mummy's curtains, with the point the Alençon lace trim. And I began to imagine how they would look in the front windows of the townhouse I would buy in London. I could really see myself moving to one of those lovely townhouses in Kensington. Perhaps on Egerton Crescent, or Thurlow Square. just a stone's throw from the Victoria and Albert. I would use the V&A's glorious library every day and go for afternoon tea at the Capitol Hotel or the Goring. I'd attend All Souls Church every Sunday and maybe even start my own Bible study fellowship. I could endow a chair in theology at Trinity College, Oxford. Maybe I could even convert an old rectory in some charming town in the Cotswolds. Some place with a particularly smart and handsome clergyman, like that Sydney Chambers in Grantchester. Goodness me, one look at him in that stiff clerical collar and I go weak in the knees. Mrs. Lee Yongchen, Chairwoman Emeritus of the Lee Philanthropic Foundation, Sui's Mahjong Khaki. I was at my Friday afternoon Mahjong game at Istana with the First Lady, Felicity Leong, and Daisy Fu when Felicity got the call. She didn't say anything to us at first. She just started rummaging through her Lorna handbag, saying she needed to find her blood pressure pills. Only after she had swallowed her pills did she say, "Ladies, I'm terribly sorry to leave like this in the middle of a game, but I must go. My mother has just passed." My goodness, the First Lady became so overcome, I thought she was going to faint right there at the table. After Felicity left, the First Lady said she should go upstairs to the office to tell the President the news. And Daisy said, "Alamak, I should call Eleanor. She didn't call me, so I bet you she doesn't know yet." When the ladies all returned, we decided to toast Sui. After all, she was a Mahjong maven par excellence. We all knew never to bet serious money when Sui was at the table. Now that she has left us, my money market account won't feel the loss, but I know her family will. Sui was the glue that held them all together. Those children of hers are a disgrace. Philip is a simpleton. Alex is a useless Hong Kong Tai Tai. Victoria is a spinster. And the one that married the Thai prince, I never really knew her. But I always heard she was very stuck up, like most Thais I've met. They think just because they've never been invaded, they are the best. Only Felicity has any sense because she was the eldest. But all those grandchildren are also good for nothings. This is what happens when too much money falls on people who are too attractive. That Astrid, so pretty, but her only talent is spending more than the GDP of Cambodia on her clothes. Look at my grandsons. Four of them are doctors. Three are lawyers. One is the youngest judge ever to be appointed to the Court of Appeal. And one is an award-winning architect. Let's not mention the grandson living in Toronto who's a hairdresser. So sad for Sui. She can't brag about any of her descendants. Just you watch. Everything is going to go down the toilet now. Nicholas Young, grandson. I had only just arrived at Tyersall Park and was unpacking my suitcases when I heard the commotion outside my bedroom. Maids were running down the corridors everywhere like a fire alarm had gone off. "What's going on?" I asked.
"Your Amma!"
one of them shouted frantically as she passed me. I immediately ran up the back stairs to Amma's bedroom. When I got there, I couldn't see anything. There were too many people blocking the way, and someone was wailing uncontrollably. Victoria, Alex, Adam, and Pia were hovering around the bed while Uncle Tuxin was embracing Auntie Cat, who was still sitting in the armchair beside Amma. Aling was closest to me by the door, and she turned toward me, her face swollen with tears. As Adam and Pia moved aside to make room for me, I could see that Eddie was lying in bed with Amma, holding her body, shaking violently as he whimpered like a tortured animal. He caught my eye, and suddenly he leapt out of bed and started screaming, "You killed her! You killed her!" Before I knew what was happening, he's on top of me, and we're both on the ground. Her Serene Highness, Mom Ratchawong, Pia Rasmi Akara, granddaughter-in-law. What an odd family I've married into. Adam's aunties are like characters straight out of a Merchant Ivory film. They go rattling around this huge palace, dressed like underpaid civil servants. But then they start speaking, and they all sound like Maggie Smith. Auntie Felicity clucks about like a mother hen, criticizing everyone, while Auntie Victoria seems to be an expert on everything, even though she hasn't worked a day in her life. She even tried to challenge me on the origin of the Hansa virus. Then there are the Hong Kong cousins. Alistair Cheng, who is very sweet, but, how do I put it politely, not the sharpest tool in the box. And his sister, Cecilia, and Fiona Tong Cheng, both perfectly polite, but so stuck up. Why do all Hong Kong girls think the sun shines out of their asses? They just chatter away to each other in Cantonese and go off on foodie adventures every day with their kids. I suspect they only came to Singapore to eat. Every time they are around, I feel like they are assessing me from head to toe. I don't think Cecilia approves of Balmain. And then there's Eddie. What a crazy fuck. Grandma has just died, and all her daughters stand there staring at her body without a single tear in their eyes. The only people who seem to be crying are the maids, the Sikh guard, and Eddie. OMFG, I have never seen a grown man sob like that. Crawling into bed and cradling his dead grandmother, dressed in a velvet smoking jacket. And then Nick, the only halfway normal person in the whole house, enters the room, and Eddie lunges at him. The aunties start to scream, but really, it's a pretty pathetic fight, because Eddie hits like a girl, and Nick simply rolls him off and pins him to the ground. "Calm the fuck down," Nick says, but Eddie's screaming, kicking, thrusting, and finally Nick has no choice but to sock him right in the nose, and blood just goes everywhere, especially all over my brand new Rick Owens toad skin boots. And now I'm told we have to spend at least another week with these people. Kill me now. Captain Vikram Gale, Head of Security, Tyersal Park. Arling called me in a panic. "Aya, come quick. They are fighting. Eddie is trying to kill Nikki." I rushed upstairs with two Gurkhas, but by the time I got to the room, it was all over. Eddie was sitting at the foot of the bed, blood all over his face. He kept saying, "You broke my nose! You are going to fucking pay for my nose job!" Nikki just stood there looking stunned. Alex smiled at me as if nothing had happened and said in the calmest voice ever, "Ah, Vikram, you're here. I'm not sure what the procedure is. Who do we call? Do we call the police now?" I was confused at first and said, "You want to report this fight?" She said, "Oh no, not that. My mother has passed away. What are we supposed to do now?" In all the confusion, I hadn't even noticed that Mrs. Young was dead. I couldn't help myself. I burst into tears right there in front of everyone. Felicity Leong, eldest daughter. No matter how old you are, no matter how ready you think you are, nothing quite prepares you for the loss of a parent. My father passed away years ago, and I still haven't quite recovered. People have been saying to me all week, "At least your mother lived to this ripe old age, and you got to spend all these years with her." And I just want to spit in their faces. I want to scream at them, "Shut up, all of you! My mother died. Please don't tell me how lucky or fortunate I am that she lived this long. She has been here on this earth my entire life, and now suddenly, in the blink of an eye, she's gone. Gone, gone, gone. And I am an orphan now. And even though she was a difficult woman, even though she drove me crazy half the time, and I was never, ever quite good enough for her exacting standards, my heart is broken. I will miss her every day and every hour for the rest of my life. My only regret was that I wasn't there with her at the moment of her passing. Kat was the only one in the room with her, and I kept asking her what happened. But Kat seems too distraught to speak. She won't tell me a thing." A small, discreet, one-column death notice was published in the obituary section of the Straits Times. Shang Su-yi, Mrs. James Young, 1919 to 2015. Beloved wife and mother. Son, Philip Young. Daughters, Felicity Young, Catherine Young, Victoria Young, Alexandra Young. Sons-in-law, Tan Sri Henry Leong, M.C. Thaksin Akara, Dr. Malcolm Cheng. Daughter-in-law, Eleanor Sung. Grandchildren and their spouses, Henry Leong Jr., married to Kathleen Carr. Dr. Peter Leong, married to Dr. Gladys Tan. Alexander Leong, Astrid Leong, M.R. James Akara, married to M.R. Lin Chakrabong. M.R. Matthew Akara, married to Fabiana Raspoli. M.R. Adam Akara, married to M.R. Piarasamy Apishapong. Nicholas Young, married to Rachel Chu. Edison Ching, married to Fiona Tung. Cecilia Ching, married to Tony Moncur. Alistair Ching. Great-grandchildren, Henry Leong III, James Leong, Penelope Leong, Anwar Leong, Yasmin Leong, Constantine Ching, Callist Ching, Augustine Ching, Jake Moncur, Cassian Teo. Brother, Alfred Shang, married to Mabel Sien. Visitations begin tonight at Tyersal Park by invitation only. Funeral at St. Andrew's Cathedral, Saturday at 2 p.m. by invitation only. No flowers, please. Donations may be made to the St. John's Ambulance Association. Chapter 2. Tyersal Road, Singapore. Gopek Lin turned to Rachel from the driver's seat of her Aston Martin Rapide.
How do you feel?
Well, I didn't manage to sleep a wink on the plane, so it's 7:30 a.m. New York time for me right now, and I'm about to crash the funeral of a woman who didn't approve of me marrying her grandson, and meet all of her possibly hostile relatives that I haven't seen in 5 years. I feel great. You're not crashing the funeral, Rachel. You're part of the family, and you're here to support your husband. You're doing the proper thing. Peck Lin tried to assure her. Peck Lin was her closest friend from their Stanford days and had always been such a pillar of support. Sitting beside Rachel in the back seat of the sports sedan, Carlton squeezed her hand in a show of support. Rachel leaned her head against her brother's shoulder and said, "Thanks for flying down from Shanghai. You really didn't have to do this, you know." Carlton made a face. "Don't be daft. If you were going to be anywhere in this hemisphere, did you think I could stay away?" Rachel smiled. "Well, I'm glad I get to spend a few moments with you both before I get sucked into the Matrix. Thanks so much for picking me up, Peck Lin." "Don't even mention it." "Poor Nick. I know he wanted to come get you, but he's totally trapped at the night visit," Peck Lin said. "So what is this night visit thing exactly?" Rachel asked. "Night visits are like sitting shiva, Singapore style. It's officially for family and close friends to come to the house to pay their last respects. But really, it's a chance for all the kepos,
Hokkien slang for busybody,
to get in on the family gossip and start scheming. I guarantee you everyone at Tyersal Park is furiously speculating about what's going to happen to the house now that Shang Su-yi has dearly departed. And there are plenty of shenanigans going on in every corner."
"Unfortunately, I think you may be right," Rachel said with a slight grimace.
"Of course I'm right. When my grandfather died, all my uncles and aunties came out of the woodwork and crept around his house during the night visit, putting stickers with their names behind paintings and under antique vases so they could claim that he had given it to them," Peck Lin said with a chuckle.
Soon, they found themselves in bumper-to-bumper traffic as the line of cars snaking up Tyersal Road to the estate's gates was stopped at a security checkpoint. Glancing at the policemen peering into the cars ahead of them, Rachel felt her stomach begin to knot up.
There's so much security. I think the president or prime minister must be here, Peklin noted. After passing through all the checkpoints, the car sped up the long driveway, and as they rounded the last curve,